support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter, down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Morro Bay, California. We're at Morro Bay City Hall with Scott Collins, City Manager. Hi, Scott.
Good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
I'm great. It's fascinating, and I've lived in Morro Bay in the area since 78, and it remains a sleepy little town where on the surface not that much happens. But right now, there is a lot happening under the surface that's going to transform Morro Bay in a lot of ways. We could start with the iconic triple smokestacks. You go, oh, I live in Morro Bay, you know, where is that, Highway 1? And they go, oh, is that where the smokestacks are? And I go, well, yeah, it's also where the 24-million-year-old volcanic rock is. But anyway, the power plant's been closed for quite a while now. What's the current status?
Yeah, well, first I want to acknowledge I was born in 1978, and it seems like a long time. It really hasn't been that long, right? But the smokestacks, the power plant, you know, that is a fixture of interest from our community, both those who live here, those who visit here, those who have relatives here, and sort of symbolic of the overall, you know, question about what the future is or should or shouldn't be for Morro Bay.
So is the current status that they're coming down?
Yes, that is the current status. The city negotiated a MOU with Vistra Corp, which is the power plant owner, with the exception of the substation, which is owned by PG&E. Part of that deal was to allow the city and to engage with the community around the discussion whether or not the stack should be maintained or be part of a teardown. So we had a pretty good community discussion last year. A lot of people participated either online, over email, or during a Zoom discussion that was facilitated. We brought in experts who have dealt with teardowns before, what's required to maintain it, including Vistra Company explaining what it takes to keep those things. And ultimately, where this decision came down for council was that the city certainly could take them out of the deal, but what would have been required from Vistra is that the city take ownership of the stacks, mm-hmm. ownership of the maintenance, ownership of the regulatory components of that, and ultimately the cost to tear them down sometime in the future, which got into the multi-million dollar range. And for council, that just didn't make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So here we are. That has been part of the deal. Vistra is still putting together a package to submit for a large battery storage facility.
Back up to
the
stacks.
Sure. Yeah.
Are the stacks coming down?
Well, that's a good question. So the deal right now is Vistra will have until the end of 2027 to tear down the existing plant as well as the stacks. Mm-hmm. And if they fail to do so for whatever reason, they owe the city $3 million, okay?
Well, I know a while back, a couple guys came up with a plan. Let's build a Seattle Space Needle restaurant on top. I mean, there's so much concrete and rebar
right.
up there. You could do that.
Right.
But
yeah, there are a lot of ideas. People talking about zip lines across the rock. and interesting ideas like wave energy generation or taking in that energy. Aquariums, universities, hotels, you know, parks, et cetera. But there's a lot of constraints on that property because of the fact it was a power plant. There is
environmental.
There's still environmental concerns, right? Mm-hmm. So any kind of commercial or recreational or visitor serving use would have require a lot of cleanup beyond what has currently been done. So it does hamstring that property a bit, mm-hmm. which is why Vistra, I think, targeted this facility for its battery project. And they've already built batteries up in Moss Landing. So this is the next step in their process.
So basically, battery storage will happen at the PG&E facility.
The plan is for them to submit, and then it obviously has to go through an extensive environmental review Planning Commission, Council, Coastal Commission, a bunch of other acronyms that I don't fully understand on the energy side of the house. So it's not a done deal. It still has to get through all those reviews, and you know, we may find that it doesn't work for us. Key concerns we've heard from community members are primarily safety, you know, around potential fires with batteries. You know, it's lithium. It's a highly dangerous substance if it's not done, controlled well. And we've learned a lot. We did some tours up at Moss Landing to look at their current facility. And
so yeah. Moss Landing is operational.
It's operational, yeah. They have two batteries there. They have one they built inside their previous the existing power plant. Unlike ours, it was concrete fortified. The one here is more metallic, so it didn't really set up well for them. And plus, all of the guts of the old power plant still exist here in our facility.
And so the battery storage, the point of that is to have a backup ready to go to feed into the grid as need arises.
The state has a very ambitious goal of pretty much just substituting all of our current energy needs with green energy. We have a long way to go. The going offline of the Diablo nuclear power plant puts us in a further deficit in year 24 and 2025.
There's talk of keeping Diablo open.
Right. Lots of talk. And ultimately, where the rubber hits the road is PG&E would have to submit for plans to maintain it, and then it would still have to go through the Coastal Commission and a bunch of other acronym agencies that make it really hard to do so, and ultimately it will come down to PG&E if they would be interested, but they've pulled back significantly and are trying to find other sources, and that's where batteries come into play, because they can harness wind and solar and other green energy, which are typically produced in the middle of the day when you don't need energy.
Interesting.
Right? Yeah, so that is one of the pieces in the puzzle. Offshore wind is certainly...
Talk about that, because that's right now happening in a visionary planning stage to put offshore wind generation. And how about wave generation?
Yeah, wave generation is really interesting. We had that looked at with the previous owners of the power plant, which was Dynegy. They were bought by Vistra not too long ago. But anyways, they looked at this and they couldn't pencil it out. We do get a lot of waves here, but it's not as... shall we say, consistent enough to make it pencil out. Whereas wind, especially up in our parts, as evident by today, we were supposed to meet outside on the waterfront to have this conversation. There's a lot of wind going on. So there's a more consistent supply of wind compared to wave energy.
Where would the wind farms be?
The wind farm, as far as I understand it, would be up north off the coast of Cambria, San Simeon area. It's 370 square miles or so, give or take, could generate up to 4 gigawatts of electricity, which is massive. That certainly would replace the deficit created by the nuclear power plant going offline.
Far enough offshore that it wouldn't impede on the visual landscape.
Well, if you live at the mansion up in San Simeon, you might see them. That's one of the areas that's being looked at. But it would be, I think, for the most part, about 20 miles offshore.
Wow.
You'd be able to see them like little tiny cigarettes off the coast, these little things way out there, you know, on a very clear day. So ultimately, the impacts are more around fishing industry.
With the cable.
Correct. The cables, obviously, migratory patterns for whales, birds. We aren't the first to go on this, so we have a lot to learn from the East Coast and European nations that have deployed offshore wind. So a lot of process involved. Ultimately, the next major steps are the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, which is an agency from the Department of Interior, is going to be leasing 3 sites in this area. I believe that lease will be an auction, so it's ultimately like an eBay auction, except we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, sometime this summer.
This is real.
This is real. A lot of interest. Clearly, there's a lot of steps beyond that, but that is a massive step. There was hang-ups because of concerns from the Navy and other segments of the Department of Defense for several years under the Trump administration. It appears that a lot of those issues have been resolved, which has allowed us to move forward, and we have Congressman Carbajal, our representative for this area, to thank for working with the president, both the previous administration, this administration, Department of Defense, and Navy, to really understand the concerns and build around those so that we're able to maintain our strategic initiatives and leave it at that offshore for our military, but also harness the wind for future generations.
What other under the radar, behind the scenes game changers are in the potential works for Morro Bay and the area?
Right. Just like all cities, we're recovering from the pandemic. You know, our revenues have done quite well. Our tourists came back with a vengeance. So we're in a position now, we're really trying to figure out how to balance the benefits of tourism with some of the side effects. So really trying to up our game, as it were, on maintenance, trash, restroom cleaning, looking at providing more amenities for our community. That's kind of the nuts and bolts of what cities do. Not entirely sexy, but that is important. That's what our community tells us they want to see more of. So there's the bipartisan infrastructure law or bill that was passed and signed by the president late last year, which has hundreds of billions of dollars on the table for local governments to help bring their bridges, their roads, their trails up to a standard that we haven't been able to maintain. It's very expensive. It seems like we've been really good as a country building things, but maintaining not so much, right?
So what are the things that need the most maintenance attention right now?
So we've been exploring that. Our water reclamation facility project, as everybody is aware, is being built right now, whether you've seen it on the highway off South Bay Boulevard or the pipeline coming through town on Quintana, and probably been affected by that. So we appreciate all of your patience as we go through this. But the next step is to look at our other infrastructure needs, and the harbor is one of the key areas that we're looking at. I'm not sure if a lot of people are familiar, and I'm still familiarizing myself with our history, but you know, that really wasn't land down there. That was sort of built by the Navy and others before them. And
so the issues has to do primarily with erosion, right?
Correct. It's the weathering, you know, the wind, the rain, the tides, the waves, all that stuff has taken a toll on the infrastructure down there. So that infrastructure supports our commercial fishing fleet, recreational fishing, tourism, the shops, all that are down there, the hotels that are down there. It's where a lot of our community recreates. It's where our visitors come. So really well, almost loved to death. And it's time that we really figure out a plan to how to take care of that. That includes the revetments that keeps the water at bay. Mm-hmm. It's the road that gets people out to the rock. It's the harbor path that gets people out to the rock on their bikes or walking or scooters, what have you. So those are some of the areas we're going to be looking at. Beyond that, our roads do need more investment. Our parks need more investment. So we're really trying to target those federal and state dollars to make that happen. But some of that will need to be done with money here locally.
So you'll have to do a bond or something to generate
it. We're looking at a lot of different options. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had a lot of ideas thrown at us, which is great. We appreciate the engagement of our community. We're looking at paid parking down the waterfront, though we don't anticipate that will generate a lot of extra revenues. We know some citizens are looking at this and potentially bringing forward a measure. We've tried things like RV camping down there, though we understand there's concerns from community members about the impacts of that. So really trying to do a all hands on deck, look at all the options and pick the ones that are going to deliver the most for us.
A couple of years ago, I don't remember when it was we met last.
2 years ago.
Yeah. Almost. COVID was happening, but it was kind of deer in the headlights time.
Yeah, I probably looked like that, didn't I?
Yeah. And at that time, you had just laid off your tourism director. And you and I talked about trying to do things in-house rather than hiring top-heavy. Right. What's the status? How are you doing tourism now as a city entity?
Yeah, so great. Yeah, when I think we talked in April of 2020 or sometime around there.
That's a year that didn't exist that got erased.
Yeah, I think everybody has fog instead of memories. It's just fog from that year. You know, what we actually wound up doing was bringing a stakeholder group together of restaurateurs, of hoteliers, people who work in the industry to figure that question out. Where do we go from here?
So how are you proactively promoting Morro Bay? Right. Is it under the umbrella of the city?
Pertinent question. We ultimately, what that group decided was, A, we need a tourism assessment that doesn't need to be approved every single year, because you wind up spending half the year trying to justify your existence.
And that relates back to the TOT, the hotel.
That's the tourism
occupancy tax.
Tourism Business Improvement District, which is different than TOT. Okay, so TOT is, you visit, you stay at a hotel, you pay 10%, that goes to the city. Doesn't go to the state, doesn't go to tourism, goes to the city. Tourism Business Improvement District funds are meant to regenerate tourism. So it's
where does the TBID money come from?
It comes from your visitor. So the visitor pays the 3%, right?
On top of whatever they buy in a retail operation.
It's only on vacation rentals and hotel stays. Okay. So that money goes to a separate pool. It used to be the city would operate tourism, but we found through this stakeholder engagement that really optimally it belongs in the hands of those who do this for a living, right?
Right.
So we took it out of the city, put it in a nonprofit that has hoteliers and vacation rental owners on the board. The city maintains a spot on that board.
What's the entity called?
It's called Visit Morro Bay. Uh-huh. So it launched last year.
So you have a director?
Director, executive director, used to work for Visit SoCal, which is the county version of TBID.
And who is that?
His name is Michael Weinbold, and mm-hmm. he has experience locally and internationally. He's run hotels, and he's a really good guy. He's spending a lot of time learning from the hoteliers and helping to educate them. I think we learned a lot from the last year. You know, it used to be that you would just sort of be a race to the bottom. Whoever can charge the least would get, they think they get the prize, they get the most visitors. But if they found in recent, especially last year, that sometimes you need to charge more, and that's how we're able to keep up with other cities. It's kind of counterintuitive, but it's actually been working out.
Charge more for what?
Per night, stays, because there sort of was a race to the bottom, right. And it just brings the whole thing down. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you can't do price, collusion or anything like that. It's against the law, but just sort of educating people that this is a place people want to be. This mm-hmm. is not a budget destination. This should be a place that people aspire to come to.
Right.
So it's interesting kind of shift in mindset.
Historically, Morro Bay in the Central Coast has focused heavily on the Valley market,
right.
On Fresno, Bakersfield, and whatnot.
Right.
And criticism or comment that I hear a lot is, why isn't there more emphasis on Monterey getaway people, Santa Barbara,
right.
Ventura, and whatnot?
Right.
Has there been a shift in who you target and how you target?
I think that's been a conversation for 10 years.
Right.
From my understanding, I've been
forever,
part of this. I know I said I was born in 78, but I became a part of this Morro Bay conversation in 2017. So I'm just, one piece in the machinery. But, everybody's sort of been saying, well, how do we get more people that are not from the Valley? So first thing I would like to say is that we love the people from the Valley.
Right.
Well, a lot of us are Valley folks. I'm not. But,
historical. Yes. I mean, my wife's family, they go back to 1906 here.
Wow.
Our grandma's cottage in North Morro Bay, they bought in 1950.
How cool is that?
Yeah, from Modesto.
I hear the story that, if you bought a home in Bakersfield, you got a free house in Morro Bay. And I said, why? I missed the boat on that. But we love our visitors. It's a two-hour and change drive. It's sort of like the summer hangout, right, mm-hmm. for the Valley. And we don't necessarily want to change that. I think what people are saying is, what can we do to diversify our visitorship?
Right.
What things will attract people from other regions, whether it's, it's in the middle of nowhere. Maybe that's a good thing in the middle of a pandemic, Look at all the recreational opportunities. It's a slower pace of life, unlike the Bay Area or San Diego or LA. Those kind of things may attract people.
And your saving grace has always been, it's an outdoor destination.
It truly is.
Yeah.
We can say it and mean it, right? Because even on days like today when it's really windy out, you can still enjoy yourself outside, go for a hike or a bike ride. So, I think those are things we'll continue to do. If COVID ultimately relents, I'm not going to say it's going to, because nobody wants to make those predictions, but mm-hmm. if it does or when it does, international travel will come back.
Right.
And we think we're primed to be a major player in that scene. Again, for the very reasons we're trying to attract from SoCal and NorCal is that open space, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think people are going to have that mindset for quite some time. I must say, though, I am not a marketing expert, so largely I don't know what I'm talking about. That's something we're going to continue to work for. And, we've heard from visitors and people in the industry, we need to do a little bit more to, clean up and improve sort of the amenities that are available here and ultimately work with our lodging partners to upgrade their properties. And mm-hmm. so the city plays a role in that, and the private sector does as well.
What are some of your biggest challenges and, the top on your hit list, the to-do list?
Wow, that's a great question. I feel very fortunate to be here. We have a very engaged community who likes to volunteer, offer their opinions, and I think largely constructively too. I've worked in other communities where that's not the case. So that That makes my job a lot easier, and we love the engagement. And we look forward to getting back into person meetings to, mm-hmm. to see our community. It's one thing to see them over Zoom and a whole nother in three-dimensional form at the Vets Hall. So we look forward to that coming soon. But some of the big issues regionally that's being looked at is water. Clearly with the ongoing drought, I've heard that this is kind of the worst drought historically in the last 1,000 years that we're experiencing in the West. So that's a concern. Homelessness is a concern in the region, maybe not exacerbated in Morro Bay, but it seems to be kind of inching up everywhere, and mm-hmm. there's no easy solutions there. Housing is another concern, both from homelessness side, but also being able to track the workforce that we need.
For rentals.
Not just the super low income and not, you know, the million-dollar homes, it's the missing middles, the term used. So how can we help participate in that without losing that uniqueness and specialness of Morro Bay, right? I think we all know what that means. Yeah. You know, it's code language, but ultimately it's smart growth. And that needs to happen throughout the region, not in any one particular city. So the city plays a role in that discussion. Those are kind of the key areas. You know, from our vantage point, we've had some turnover in the city. It's just kind of on the organizational side. A lot of new faces and folks working for the city, which is great, a lot of energy, but it's a steep learning curve. And especially when everything is moving so fast, you have the federal money coming in, you have all these opportunities and challenges. And so it's been exciting, but a bit overwhelming.
All right. Well, Scott Collins, City Manager, City of Morro Bay. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
You're welcome.
Enjoyed it.
To learn more about your world, you guys have a go-to website.
Yeah, it's morrobayca.gov, and you can call me anytime, 805-772-6206, or email scollins@morrobayca.gov. Thanks so much.
Scott, thanks again. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Morro Bay, California. We'll see you here with the Sea Otters.
Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives. And Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.